Now we're going to have a sermon today on how to be a good wife. So tomorrow you mothers will be able to say, you know, the nice gifts or cards or special things that your family does for you, you can say, well, I deserve it. You can see why you deserve it by analyzing what God says is required of you. And if you don't meet the requirements, then maybe you should skip tomorrow, you know, and just say, well, let's wait a year. then we can go ahead and have Mother's Day, and I can be worthy of the gifts or appreciation that is shown to me. So I want to go into the subject of how to be a good wife. Satan has attacked God's church through government once again in the last year. And if he's not successful at that, whereby a person leaves God's church, gets upset, gets discouraged, goes their own way, then he has to try some other area. He has to attack you in some other way. And the best way for him to do that would be through the marriage institution, because the marriage institution does picture the family of God. It pictures what our life with God the Father and Jesus Christ is going to be like, the closeness, the relationship of oneness that two people should be able to picture in a marriage. And if he can get at us in any way in our marriage, he certainly will. And I think it's obvious that in the area he has tried to do that. He has tried to destroy marriage and has tried to affect all of our marriages. So I think we need to keep that in mind as we go through some of these areas here realize that we have to put out a great deal of effort to make our marriages work. Now, if you're not married, then these principles will be valuable. For you fellows, you can know what to look for in a wife. And for you gals, you know what you should live up to if you are planning to marry or hoping to in the future. These are some of the qualities that God says you should have. So, with that in mind, let's go into some of the points that I have drawn out here of how to be a good wife. Point number one that I have brought out, which is probably the first point that you would think of, especially men would think of when it comes to a wife, is a wife should be submissive. Now, we live in a society right now where we have a great deal of emphasis on women finding themselves. The responsibility of being a housewife is no longer in our society looked upon as much as it was maybe 50 years ago as something that is honorable. We have so many women in the job market. They're out there competing with men. They've got their careers. They no longer want a family. They would rather, you know, be single, or even if they're married, you know, not have children, be single. We have gals who would rather have relationships with men than marriage. So common law type situations exist in our society. And that's the emphasis that we see more and more, and that rubs off, that attitude of, look, you need to get out there and, you know, discover life, because you've been held back. And we find more and more, even older women, are leaving their husbands, leaving their families, and they're going out there to live life, because they have not had all these wonderful experiences that are supposedly going to be found out there in society. So consequently, we have this pressure on women to go do your own thing. And the responsibility of rearing children, taking care of a house, cooking meals, ironing clothes, that no longer is looked upon as being in or chic. If you want to be chic, you want to be in, you want to be satisfied with life, then you get out there, you make money, you have a lot of money, you spend it on yourself, on things that you have been missing out on. And that emphasis is on our youth, too. Young gals are getting married in the church. How many of you remember when there was no divorces of Ambassador College graduates? Remember that time? How many of you remember that? And we had this group from Florida, I think, came in, one of the universities, and they wanted to analyze Ambassador College and find out, well, what makes Ambassador College tick? I mean, you know, Here's an institution that puts out people that don't get divorces. Well, that's not the case now. Matter of fact, we have quite a few divorces of Ambassador College graduates. So, you know, what has happened? What's taking place in society? There is a tremendous influence upon men as well as women. And today I get to lean on the women a little bit. So, you know, keeping that in mind and the tremendous shift may be justified where women were oppressed and mistreated and abused, and that is very true. And, you know, we've had experiences in God's church where men were ogres. I mean, they just required too much of their wives. And they were cruel. And they were too demanding. And they were not sensitive to the needs of the wife. And consequently, it just turned the wife off. And, many of those marriages, have fallen apart, even within God's church. So we don't want that to happen to our marriages, and we have to, look what God says, look at what God says in the Word of God, and put it into application, and believe it, and take it at face value. What it says is what we should be doing. So, you know, the idea of submission has maybe, you know, subsided quite a bit in God's church. I remember, 15, 20 years ago, maybe we were a little bit overboard in our emphasis of wives being submissive. And a lot of wives were really abused. And we had some hard-nosed guys in the church that really should have been put out of the church because of the way they treated their wives. And, you know, that's not what we're advocating. Is you wives, you just lay down and let your husband beat up on you, abuse you verbally, treat you like, you know, filth? No, that's not what we're saying. We're saying when it comes to submission that there is a proper attitude that God gives in the book of Ephesians. Let's turn over there. And he has to, God has to go through and explain what he's talking about here when he talks about being submissive, because he mentions a number of other places throughout the New Testament. And he talks to wives and says, look, you should be submissive. Ephesians 5th chapter and verse 22. Well, first, let's go back to verse 21. It's interesting to note before God gets even into describing how husbands and wives should fulfill their role, he says, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. He emphasizes to the husband as well as the wife that you submit yourself one to the other. In other words, a man is going to give to his wife. He's going to give up those things that he would like to have so that he can please her, so that he can satisfy her, because he loves her so much. She's the most dear thing to him in life, and he wants to give up so that he can please her and satisfy her. Now, of course, there has to be a balance. There has to be, you know, you can't just give everything to a person. It's like little kids, you know. There's a time when there has to be a balance where you say, no, that's not good for you, or that's too much, or now is not the time to receive that. So obviously there has to be a balance where you're both giving to one another. So in verse 22, God says, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands. Now isn't that fortunate that he said that you submit yourself to your own husband? Not to everybody else's husband. So you're subject to him. Some other guy comes along and tells you what to do. You can tell him, you know, go fly a kite, fella. You know, I do what my husband tells me, and you know, I submit to him. And once again, this is based upon, if we go back to the sermon I gave on men, this is based upon communication, where the husband dwells with you according to knowledge. So he talks to you, he explains. He doesn't just say, do that, do this, come on, snap to. Nobody likes that. Because in actuality, what is he saying? You are a second-class citizen. Right? You're a second-class citizen, so hop to it. I can just demand you to do this and just say it in a, demanding manner, and you should jump to it. No, that's not what God wants to happen. But he does say that you should submit yourself unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. Okay, in other words, there's this relationship that Christians have with God Almighty and Jesus Christ, and how do we function? Well, if we know how we function with Christ and how we deal with Christ and God the Father, then we can understand how we can function with one another. Now, God doesn't just say, come on, snap to it. You know, curt and with a uncaring attitude, without any compassion and empathy and tenderness and love. No, God has a great deal of that. Mercy. Great deal of mercy. Forgiveness. Where we make mistakes after mistakes after mistakes. And he doesn't just blot us out, you know, just smash us. No, God is very, very, very considerate. And that's the way a husband should be toward his wife. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church. And he is the Savior of the body. Okay, so Christ deals with the church in a very loving manner. And he is concerned about the church. He doesn't want to put the church down. He doesn't want to abuse the church or take advantage of the church. He wants to help the church. That's what Christ does, day in and day out. He helps. He listens. Of course, when we pray, here we have Jesus Christ that we're actually praying to at the right-hand side of God the Father. And you might say, he's our mediator. All things are I'm just going to use the word censored, but that's not proper term that I want to use, but filtered through him. And he says that he understands and he can comprehend the problems, the difficulties, the feelings that we have, and he can sit there and he can talk to God the Father and say, well, now, you know, such and such and such, I can understand this, I can understand how they feel, and I understand that they're going through this difficulty, and hey, this is kind of tough for them, and especially because of such and such and this and that. And Christ understands as we pray, and he listens to our prayers. And so he is very concerned about us. Well, that's the way the husband should be to the wife. And the wife should have confidence in that the husband is going to be of that frame and that mind and that attitude, and then it's going to be far, far, far easier to submit. Now, let's go a little bit further. Verse 24. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, in other words, we pray, we ask for direction, we ask for guidance, and we say, well, you know, what is the best thing for us to do? Just like Mr. Gillum was bringing out in the sermonette. God does not say, now, when this situation comes up, this is how to apply love. He doesn't give us that, does he? You know, all these do's and don'ts and absolutes. He gives us the principle. He gives us the basic attitude that we should have. And if we apply that attitude in all the situations, then we're going to be of a right frame of mind. Well, that's with the wife. She should be subject. But you're going to have to talk out all of these various situations that you come up against. And the final word is what your husband says. The final word. But should he get advice? Well, what if he doesn't know, you know, how to approach something? Well, he should get advice. He should get understanding. It goes back that he should dwell with her according to knowledge. Some husbands don't like to do that because they feel threatened. Because, quite frankly, they're dumbos. You know, they just don't know how to handle a lot of situations or what to do. So they just say, wife, do this. I don't want to look into it. I don't want to find out, you know, what is the best thing to do. I don't want to put out the mental effort to come to, you know, the knowledge that is needed to make a proper decision. So they'll just say, wife, do this. And I know, you know, men can do that because I've done it. And you've probably done it. And that's not the way to dwell with the wife. And consequently, she's going to have a real problem of being subject to you when she feels like, well, you know, Gasly, the guy is not even considerate. She's not going to have the respect that she needs. So the final word is the husband, after he has explained things, then the wife should be subject to him. And it says here in verse 24, therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. In everything. He's the final word. What he says, then you would go along and make that program work. Just like Pasadena. It's a tremendous analogy. Here's Pasadena, which is actually what? The head. right? The information we get from Pasadena is coming from Jesus Christ, coming through the head. Comes down, comes to me, comes to you. We find out what it is. Well, we should make the program work. Now, if we don't agree with it, then what is our responsibility? Well, if you didn't agree with something, you come to me. You talk with me about it. And if I felt it was, you know, worthy, I would say, well, yeah, I can understand your point of view, and I agree with you. Now, if I felt it was unworthy, I'd say, well, you know, I really don't understand it. Well, hopefully we could work it out on that level. If you're not satisfied, then you go ahead and write to Mr. Blackwell or some other individual in Pasadena and, you know, get the thing resolved so that you can be wholehearted. Now, there's going to be situations that come along where maybe you won't have the situation resolved. In your mind, it's you know, you feel that you're justified, and maybe it's not sin, maybe it's approach. In other words, it's not absolute. You should keep Pentecost on this day or that day. It involves approach. Because if it comes to a doctrinal question where you feel like you would be sinning if you did something, then you need to work that out, you know, resolve that problem. Because we don't want to sear anybody's mind, although I found since I've been in the ministry, those problems don't generally arise unless a person is headed out of God's church, and really it's another problem that they're upset about, and it's really not the doctrinal issue that they will bring up. But if it's an approach to something, maybe it's Quest magazine. You don't like Quest magazine. You don't like naked men on front of Quest magazine. You know, that really bothers you. So you know, you try and get that thing resolved. Well, there are going to be times when your wishes, your desires are not going to be accepted. Headquarters says, we don't want to do it their way or your way, or me or you or anybody else. And the final word is, this is what we do. Now, we have Quest magazine, or we have PD distribution program, or we have you know, the Feast of Tabernacles, where you make your own arrangements. Whatever it is, maybe we don't agree with it. We've talked it out. We've tried to see why it is decided that way. And there comes times when you just have to say, okay, I'll submit to the program and make it work. Because you can not submit and not make it work. So you can drag your feet and destroy the program. So wives need to be aware of that. There's going to be times when you have disagreements, you've talked it over, and the husband finally says, well, hon, you know, I can't explain anymore. This is what we have to do. And the wife has to say, okay, I'll make it work. You can make programs work. And, you know, even the husband should be willing to sacrifice and do things for his wife, even though he would not really do it that way himself. Should be, you know, that attitude as well, where he would say, well, it doesn't mean that much to me. I'll go ahead and do it her way and make her way work if it's workable. Now, I don't think you should say, okay, well, I'm going to show her. You know, I'm going to go ahead, we're going to do this, and we're going to, you know, she's going to learn that I'm right and she's wrong. And, you know, you get into something where you are absolutely sure that it's going to fall apart, because that's what happened back there with Adam and Eve. Adam had better sense than to do what he did. He knew his wife shouldn't have been doing what she was doing. But he says, you know, I'll just go along with her. And unfortunately, in our society, we have a lot of men that are of that frame of mind, where the wife is the one that wears the pants in the family. She's the one that tells hubby what to do. And hubby's so weak-willed, he just kind of just, well, you know. And he won't stand up and say, hey, this is the way it is, dear, you know. After he's prayed and he's close to God, he says, now this is the way it is, and this has to be this way. And stand up and tell her that, look, dear, you are in a wrong attitude. Now, maybe she's not in the church. Well, that, you know, presents some other problems. Because she's not going to have God's Spirit. And I think, you know, you should be as lenient as you possibly could to, you know, be nice to unconverted mate, because they don't have God's Spirit. They don't have the ability to respond like a converted person should. Not that they always do, but they should be very, very sensitive to the unconverted. Try and please them as much as possible. But even at that, there has to be authority in the family. Or else it affects the whole family. It affects the children. It affects their growth. It affects their attitude toward life, toward future mates, whether they're male or female, these kids growing up. And we affect them. We affect them by our attitudes toward one another. And there has to be this role modeling that goes on. And if you're a weak husband, then fellas, guy, the fellows are going to grow up, they're going to be dominated by mom. And, it's my personal belief and feeling that that affects a great deal of the homosexual scene that we have today. Although, there's a big emphasis that it's genetic, just something in the genes. Say, it's not environment, it's not the influence of the family, which I believe personally it solely is. And I think, the additives and foods and that type of thing certainly, destroy hormones and that type of thing in all of us. But this role modeling that God has instituted from the very creation of Adam and Eve, if men would believe it, if women would believe it and follow it, then we would have a happy environment. When you get into psychology and philosophy and you start to, just get off and say, well, no. We have studies that bring out this in rats and apes and, even in human beings. And we feel that this will work. Well, mankind has been trying to find out how to live for 6,000 years and he can't do it. So if we put into practice what God says, then we're going to be successful. So the bottom line is, look, husband is the final word. Wife should submit. Husband should be very loving and talk all things out. But there has to be the final authority in the home, and it has to be the husband. And he's got to take that responsibility. Now, there is a problem where a lot of husbands don't want to take that responsibility. They don't like it. And we're seeing in our society more and more men who would rather stay home and wash dishes and take care of the house, and the wife go out and work. We're getting all mixed up. We're getting confused. Our environment, our society, it's confused. And that's not the way to have a happy, married life. That's not the way the family should function. God says that there is a proper approach, and if we put it into practice and believe, Hebrews 11, or the 4th chapter talks about that, that attitude of belief in God, in everything that He says, we have to believe it. Believe it. And put it into practice. 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter. Now, I personally think that we have in the past had, ogres that were in the church that beat their wives. How many of you remember, have been in the church, 10, 15 years, and you remember back when we had situations where there were, maybe you knew them or you heard of them, men that were, domineering and just beat their wives or, really abused them mentally and had problems. Okay, we've had that in the past. And I personally think, look, the snake is going to try and discredit God's truth, right? How would you do it? I'd get me a, just like in society, how does Satan try and discredit the church? Well, he gets Jim Jones on TV. Dramatic TV presentation of what one man can do to a group. And people get upset. And hey, how many of you think that you had relatives or friends that were thinking of you when that thing was going on? Sure. They were thinking of you. This person's hooked up with this same situation. Maybe not as bad yet, because they don't know some of the things that we believe. You talk about tithing. We teach in tithing. A person called me the other day. He was talking about tithing. How about if you're really suffering financially. Do you tithe? Sure you do. You tithe. You tithe on your net? No. Mr. Armstrong says gross. Well, we got that cleared up. Oh, well, no, wait a minute. What do you mean? You mean you tithe first, second, third? I tell you, when they find out what we believe, they're going to think we are absolutely crazy. So the snake's going to try and discredit us any way he can. And I often think about people coming into the church. If I were the snake, I would try and get somebody into the church. Here's what I would do on this healing thing, on healing. I would get somebody into the church, and then I would get their little child sick. Then I would have them just handle the situation in a very poor manner. You know, curse doctors, let all your relatives know how you hate doctors, and that your church teaches that doctors are satanic. Here these folks are thinking, well, you know, most of the doctors I know, you know, they're trying to help people. And get them to stir up a lot of animosity and hate because of that. And then get their little child sick, have the child die, and have the parents say, no, I'm not letting any satanic doctor get in there and work on my child. And then what do? You bring reproach upon the church, right? Sure. That's why we had guys, you know, in the church, and even still do, that beat their wives. Not as many, but I mean, you know, 10 years ago, I can think of, up in Eugene, Oregon, we had problems like this and spread through the church. And some of these guys were just ogres. And at that time, you know, we were telling the wives to be submissive, and of course, divorce was out of the question. And some of these wives would just get, you know, getting the snot beat out of them, so to speak. And, you know, bam, bam, hi, honey, I love you, dear. You know, here's this gal, she calls up, oh, help me. Well, do you want a divorce? No, you know, security. And that's tough for a woman. Say, you know, even though this guy, you know, he's beating the living daylights out of her. Well, divorce means that, you know, she's never going to be able to remarry at that time. Oh, tough, tough. And I think the snake took advantage of it. And he got some real ding-a-lings in the church and brought some discredit upon the church. And I'm sure if he can, he'll try and do it again. But I think we have more wisdom and more knowledge. We are becoming more mature and we know how to handle those situations. But that era is gone, where we're just, you know, having wives submit to where it's oppressive and it's miserable, where they want to commit suicide, but they know that's, you know, that's against God's law. You know, I'd like to blow my brains out, but I can't because, you know, it's sin. Then I'll end up in the lake of fire. So, oh boy, you know, I'll just live in the bad situation. Well, it's not what God is wanting for people. Chapter 3 of 1 Peter. 1 Peter 3, verse 1. Likewise, you wives, be in subjection to your own husbands. Now, this is talking about ladies whose husbands aren't in the church. That if any obey not the word, they also may without the word be won by the conversation, or conduct is a better translation. By your conduct, by your attitude. Now, some husbands have found out that we in the church teach that a wife should be submissive. And I've dealt with a couple of situations like that, where they have found out that we teach that the wife should submit to the husband. And they love it. Oh, they love it. I had one situation back in West Virginia where the guy, you know, he just abused his wife. And she was a little confused and didn't really inform me of all the, you know, information about the marriage. And here, this guy was just taking advantage. He'd been to one service and heard, you know, a sermon on wives being submissive. And he was making sure she was. Well, he eventually came to the place where, you know, she had to leave him because he was, you know, getting carried away. He was taking advantage of her. God does not require that. If the unbelieving depart, and they can depart by, you know, wrong conduct, where they are just, you know, violent people to live with, abusive people to live with. So if they, you know, the unbelieving depart, let them depart. You're not under bondage in such cases. And we've had situations like that. So, you know, there is a balance here. Obviously, if you're going to show forth the right attitude of trying to work with your husband, even though there are a lot of things he doesn't understand and know that you know are sin, you try and use wisdom. You spend a great deal of time asking God for wisdom. And once again, God, like Mr. Gillum said, God doesn't give you the do's and don'ts about those situations. You're going to have to pray and ask for direction every day so that you'll be able to make the wise decision on how to handle yourself in your relationship with your unconverted mate. You know, how far is too far? How far is not far enough? What do you compromise on? What don't you compromise on? It takes a great deal of wisdom when you're dealing with the unconverted. So while they behold your chaste conduct or conversation, coupled with fear, hopefully they're going to look at you and they're going to say, hey, you know, I don't know what it is about this church, but it sure makes my wife more pleasing to live with. Now, it should. Now, if it doesn't, then maybe you're not getting anything. Maybe you aren't doing what you should be. And consequently, you're alienating instead of winning over your husband. But, yeah, you should be in subjection to the unconverted as well as the converted and have this attitude of trying to go along with those final decisions that your husband makes. 1 Timothy 2, and let's start in verse 11. 1 Timothy, the second chapter, and notice verse 11. Let the woman learn in silence with all subjection. Now, what in the world is God telling women to do here? What do you mean, learn in all silence with all subjection? And he says, but I suffer a woman not to teach nor to usurp authority over the man. What, you know, I mean, it's very clear that God has created the man to be the final word, to make the final decision as, okay, we go in this direction. This is what we do. This is how we work out today. You know, this is, you go here and I'll go there. And of course, this, once again, is based upon communication after discussing things. But the final word is, okay, this is what you do and this is what I'll do. And this is how we work things out. Final word should be the husband. Now, what's it talking about when it says in verse 11, let the woman learn in silence with all subjection? Well, obviously, it's talking about the truth. It's talking about the church. It's talking about the learning that comes in the church. A woman should not preach or teach in the church, should not even have a position where she directs other men in the church, where she's telling other men what to do. A woman should never be put in that position. Now, we have women in the world, or even in the church that work in the world, that unfortunately are over other men. And it's a bad situation. It is not good for a woman to tell men what to do, her husband or any other men, to teach and direct men, because it does something to them. God obviously put it here for a reason. It must affect women. If they're going to have the direction and leadership over other men, then somewhere along the line, it's got to destroy something, or else God wouldn't say, look, don't do it. Right? You're going to look at men, you're going to say, look at this incompetent slob. Now, quite frankly, I have met some pretty competent women. Now, you know what's the best thing for them? To marry a competent fellow. Submit to him. She should not marry an incompetent guy, because then she's going to have a real problem. Now, sometimes you have that happening, where here's, you know, a real competent gal, and she marries this incompetent slob that has no desire to do anything. And wow, you have got a problem on your hands. Got a real, you know, friction there if you're going to try and do it the way God says to do it. So God is saying, look, even, you know, when it comes to the church, and another principle that I remember was surprising when I, you know, heard it explained by another minister, where he said, look, you know, even when it comes to Bible study questions, you wives should take them to your husbands first. Don't circumvent him. It's just like me, you see, I should go through the line of authority. If I have a question, I take it to my superior. And then he takes it to his superior. And that's the way it works. If you have a question, you have a problem, you see, let's say it will be a woman, she takes it to her husband. Husband brings it to me. If I can't take care of it, then I take it to my supervisor. And he goes on up the line, if it's warranted. You see, if we don't come to some conclusion before that time. And it's valuable that we get, you know, a final authority or word on it. So there has to be that chain of authority. And even, you know, when it comes to the home and you're sitting down and you're studying the Bible, hey, the husband should go ahead and answer those questions for the wife. And then she can respect him. She can look to him. He is the spokesman for that family. Now, that doesn't mean when you're standing around, you're talking in general conversation, that the wife has to be silent. She can't say anything. She whispers in her husband's ear. My wife wants to know such and such. No, that's an informal situation. And in those situations, you know, I think most wives should feel very free to converse and talk with other men, or talk with the local minister, or talk with other women, or voice her opinions. That's fine. But, you know, when it comes to teaching, learning, In the church, it's very obvious, woman is not to teach, she is to be submissive to her husband, and she should not be over other men. Just, you know, a principle. It teaches that harmony. Because her qualities and the attributes that God has given her are best used to take care of the home, take care of the responsibilities that she's given of rearing the children, the home, making sure that she is a helpmeet to her husband. Because that's what God created her to be. And then hopefully, you know, I mean, really what this emphasizes is when you make a selection, you gals, you better do a good job. Because you're going to have to submit to that fellow. You're going to have to respect the final word that he comes up with. And if he's a real dumbo and he comes up with some real wing-ding ideas, hey, you don't want to have any part with that person. Now, maybe you've made a mistake. You're sitting there with a mistake. What do you do now? Pray and fast a lot. That's what you do. Now, hopefully you won't do that. And I think in most of our cases we have married the person that we've married because we love them and we respect them. And there are qualities there that are admirable. And we are appreciative of who God has blessed us with. And if that's not the situation, then maybe you need to pray and ask God to bring to mind all the positive, the good that you see in that person. Because I've dealt with marriage situations. And boy, I tell you, you can get very negative very quickly and forget all the positive, wonderful attributes that that person has. And really, you know, I haven't met too many people that aren't likable, that don't have something that you can look at and respect. Even some of the mean ogres that I run into that were not members of the church. You know, some of these guys and gals have been, you know, lovely people. If they could just emphasize in their personality or their makeup or the way they think and do those things that are pleasant about them. So, obviously, God goes on to bring out that a woman has to learn this principle because it's not easy for her, as he brings out even a little further here in verse 13, 1 Timothy, the second chapter. It says, even for Adam was first born, then Eve. And Adam was not deceived. So here is the, you know, interesting. Adam was not deceived, but he went along with the wife. See? And how many men, how many times have you done that? Just go along with the wife so that you'll shut her up. See, just keep her quiet, appease her, even though it's not good, it's bad, you go ahead, okay, honey. Go along with her, even though you know it's a bad decision. Well, that's a problem that men have. They go along with the bad decision. And the wife has a problem with what? Trying to dominate husbands. Here's the wife dominating the husband. Look, honey, you do this, you do that. I am in control of this house, is what she's actually saying. And here's old husband, you know, he doesn't want her to get upset because, you know, well, he just wants peace. He just wants peace at home. He doesn't want wife to go up, not talking to him. So he just goes along with her, gives her what she wants. No, you boy, that's when you fast and you pray and, well, you know, goes back to when you first decided to get married, you know. Obviously, you were not wise in marrying somebody like that. And there are people like that. And that's why it's so, so valuable that you get to know a person before you get married. And you can't get to know them, you know, totally. But boy, the more time you spend, the better off you are. For Adam was first formed, then Eve, and Adam was not deceived. But the woman being deceived was in the transgression. Notwithstanding, she shall be saved in childbearing. She's going to have to go through some pain and suffering in childbearing. Right? No, that's not what it's talking about. You know, where she's going to learn, you know, God's going to teach her, all right, you were rebellious, so all women from this time on are going to suffer. No, that's not what it's bringing out. And I know I've heard that explained that way before. How many of you have heard that explained that before? Okay. It's not what it's emphasizing. What it's emphasizing, the whole subject is submission. You know, the whole chapter is talking about submission. You have to be subject to authority, right? That's what it's talking about. So she is going to learn to fulfill her role. And her role is going to be, she's going to learn to be submissive and be at home and take care of children. And she's good at it. She's far better than the husband at it. God knows that. He says, now, it's better that these kids grow up under the tutoring of a woman, more so than the man. The man, he's going to be gone. He's going to be out working, and the wife's home taking care of the kids and changing diapers and all that and feeding them. Now, man wasn't created with glands whereby he can nurse a baby, was he? No, the woman was. And he wasn't created with organs whereby, he could become pregnant. The woman was. And so her chief responsibility is going to be to take care of children and be at home with the children, take care of the house. And she'll learn her position, her role, what she's best cut out for. And it is not to lead and direct and make final decisions. That is best cut out for men. Now, obviously, you look at the history of the Bible and you see that God was even very much aware that in ancient Israel, that the men became so incompetent, did not want responsibility, that there was a woman that had to stand up and lead the nation of Israel. And so here's Deborah comes on the scene. She says, come on, fellas, follow me. She's out there leading the guys in battle. She was the strongest personality that Israel had at that time. So a woman can fulfill that responsibility. That's not the best place that she is going to fit in. And she has a tendency to want to do that. Or God wouldn't have mentioned it. That, look, the best thing for her to do is to rear children. And it says if they continue in faith and charity and holiness with sobriety. So here's the woman who, stays at home, takes care of that responsibility, and then she is going to be satisfied. She's going to have that satisfaction. She's going to be able to see the work of her hand. She's going to be productive, and everybody needs that. She's going to be able to see it all around her, all day long. And that will give her satisfaction in life. And I tell you, we've been working on Mr. Blackwell's house and trying to pick out wallpaper and some countertops and linoleum and carpet and spice it up and pick out what's the best paint and all that. When I have any questions, I'll talk to the ladies, talk to my wife, talk to Mrs. Gillum, say, what do you think? What do you think? And they have the best ideas. And they're the ones that are good at that. And I'll tell you, you go out and you look, and it's a job. It is a tremendous job. And I think as I get older and older, I appreciate what women are qualified at doing. Because I know it's really taxing. I just get wore out. My mind just turns off, The old mind says, no more, Walden. That's it. I am not looking at any more linoleum, carpet, or anything. And after a while, here I'm in there looking at these books of wallpaper. They start to blend. They all start to look the same to me. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, what's going on? My eyes are playing games. They start to blend. They all look the same. And my wife, no, oh, man, can't you tell the difference here and there and there? God does something to the eyesight of a woman whereby she can look through all these stupid books and come up with the proper selection, hopefully. So God knew that. He says, hey, this is good for you. You should submit, be at home, take care of that responsibility, and you're going to be happy. Well, that brings us to the second point. What is the responsibility of women if they're going to be happy? Well, they should be good keepers at home. Keepers of the household. Point number two. Let's look over here in 1 Timothy, the 5th chapter, just over a page. It's 14. Here is Paul giving Timothy, who is a minister, he's giving him sage advice on how to take care of the problems that are going to crop up in the church. He says here in chapter 5 and verse 14, he says, I will therefore that the younger women marry. We got any younger women here? Okay, now God says it'd be better for you to marry, if at all possible. And I know that if it's not possible, boy, it's frustrating. Because a woman likes appreciation. A woman needs appreciation. She needs for someone to say, ooh, you're lovely. you are gorgeous, and oh, the beautiful hair, and oh, you're so attractive. Oh, you know, they need that. They need that more than a man does. Fulfill. And if she's not, then she's blaspheming God. Look, God, you don't know how to live my life and make me fulfilled and happy. I know how to do it. Well, then you make, you know, what God has said from the very word go. You're making him out a liar, aren't you? You're saying, God, you're a liar. It doesn't work. We're in a new society. We've got a new, you know, new ball game. You're living in the Old Testament. You're living way back when. It doesn't work. I know how to be happy. No, God says that you just blaspheme God's word. When you circumvent that, you go around it, you come up with excuses. So hopefully we're going to see better and better examples of that. And I think of Pasadena. I know there's a lot of young married gals out there that work for the offices. When you look at God's word, boy, you know, maybe when you don't have children, for financial reasons, great. But when the first little baby comes along, where should mom be? Right there with baby all day long. It's where he should be. She should be right there taking care of that little one. And boy, that's a full-time job. And it's an important job. And you can't, you know, a woman that doesn't have fulfillment, when she's rearing these children, they come up and you look at them, they're beautiful and they got beautiful character, personalities. And you think you're not fulfilled in life? What is more fulfilling than your children? Well, Proverbs 31, let's go over there. It talks about a wife and the awesome responsibility that is in the home. It says here it's talking about you know, being an example of doing good to her husband all the days of her life. In verse 12, she works with wool and flax and works willingly with her hands. Proverbs 31, verse 13. In other words, here she is, she's got chores around the house. Now, you know, it's talking about wool and flax. Nowadays, it's not necessary that you gals go out and buy wool and flax and go ahead and make, you know, the material and then sew it and put it together and make the clothes like it was at this particular time. That's not necessary. Matter of fact, I know that was emphasized and some people still do it. But I really don't think you're going to be able to compete with the designers and the machinery that we have in our day and age. I just have not seen too many clothes that were made by a particular woman that look better than what you can buy in the store. Now, I know some people say, well, you know, really a woman should stay at home and should make, you know, husband's suit, make their dresses, make the kids' clothes. And they really feel that that is the responsibility of a wife. And she should, you know, that's how she can help out and save money and that type of thing. I can always tell if it's made at home or bought in the store. And I like what I see coming out of the store more than what I see that is made. You know, even women's dresses. I know when we had spokesman clubs, a lot of the ladies would make these, you know, these gowns and everything. And more times than not, you know, I could even, with a gown like that, sometimes you could duplicate pretty much what was in the store for a lot less. But even at that, you know, I prefer what you buy in the store. Because you've got qualified people putting this stuff together. And hey, if it's there, you know, we're blessed to live in this society, go out. And it's a job to go out and pick and select and get something out of the store. So I don't think it's necessary for you ladies to feel obligated that you got to, you know, get the wool and flax and stay at home and sew and make all these clothes. That might be a bit much for us in our day and age. Now, if, you know, we were in the frontier days, you'd have to do it. That'd be about all you could get together. So, anyway, it is emphasizing that, boy, there's a lot of work to be done at home. To take care of the clothes, take care of all the responsibilities. Now, I have a little list here of here are some of the services that a wife performs every day. Now, when I go through this, you cannot tell me that the responsibility of being a keeper at home is not awesome. This is awesome. All right, here are some of the services. In the kitchen, here's what she does. She's a cook for 8.5 hours a week. She's a dishwasher for 6 hours a week if she washes them by hand, basically. And that can even get longer than that if she washes them by hand. Even loading up a dishwasher, if you got one of those. Hey, that takes time. I don't know. I asked my wife, honey, how's this go in here? I don't know. And I appreciate that we've got somebody that is qualified to know how to, just arrange things in a dishwasher. It takes talent. Get all those dishes in there and get them clean. So, let's not criticize that, women have so many conveniences now. Well, they do. But even to run them takes know-how. She's a dietitian for 2 hours on the average of a week, planning out the meals. And sometimes that can be longer. She's a baker for 2.5 hours in the kitchen out of the week. And that can go up, too. These are just averages. She's a waitress for 4.5 hours out of the week. And bring all the food. Now, how many of you husbands tip your wife as a waitress? You don't tip your wife, huh? How many of you even say thanks after a gorgeous meal? We had a lovely meal last night. I don't know. First time in the last, I don't know how many weeks, we had squash that was good. Now, I don't like squash. If you just take it, you cut it, you put it in its juice, and you cook it and put it on the table. The yellow squash, oh boy, that's doesn't do anything to me. Just mush. Now, whatever we had last night was absolutely gorgeous. And, I told my wife, this was lovely. I appreciate that. So, here she is, waitress, cook, all these wonderful things. Now, other areas. A nurse. She's a nurse for on the average of 2 hours a week. She's a babysitter for 20 hours a week. Just taking care of the kids. Someone there to watch them. She's a governess for 30 hours out of the week. Directs them, guides them, teaches them, trains them, helps them with their schoolwork. Are we getting the point here? The home, taking care of that responsibility. Awesome job. We're going over 40 hours. We're already over 40 hours a week. Okay. Chambermaid. 3.5 hours a week. Okay? All you fellows realize that. Now, if you, quite frankly, if you went down and paid for it, fellas, society, that's what they do. They want a chambermaid. Well, they're going to buy one. Well, boy, we're making a real killing. I mean, she's doing all this other stuff, too. Purchasing, 3 hours a week. Works in the laundry for 9.5 hours a week. Hear to that. I mean, the washing machine's always going, or in there drying clothes, or putting them in, or sorting them, or doing something. Home economic major, taking care of finances and that type of thing for 4 hours a week. Dressmaker for 4 hours. If she does that, this is the average person. A handyman. Or handy woman, I guess we should say. They have handy man. Handy woman for 3 hours out of the week. A hostess for 2.5 hours. General housekeeping for 7.5 hours, which I think that could go up a little bit. And she's a secretary, getting those phone calls for 3.5 hours, which I know my wife does. Outside the home, she's a gardener for 4.5 hours, a chauffeur for 4 hours, and a recreation director. Now, you put hourly wage to that, and, hey, we're getting off easy, guys. We have got a real steal here. It's better to marry than get all these services done, by somebody else. So it's a tremendous blessing to have a wife. And you go through Proverbs 31, and it shows that she is able. She considers a field. She goes out and buys it. She's able to work with finances. Now, once again, some people think, well, the husband ought to be in charge of the checkbook. Well, some families it's that way, some families it isn't. If she's better at it, let her take care of it. Unless you don't want her to see, how you're juggling the books and how you wheel and deal and write checks out for expenditures when you don't have any money in the bank. You know, coming in tomorrow. Some wives would they'd go up the wall if they knew you were doing that. But obviously, Proverbs 31 goes through and says that she is capable of doing quite a bit. She's no ding-a-ling. Now, some women feel like that they don't find themselves unless they're out there in that job market furthering their career. And they do maybe these things that I just read off, and they're frustrated with life. How can you be frustrated? You get the immediate reward. Right there, you see it. Guy goes to work, he works down here for, OIME. He welds these rigs. You see it. You see it every day. Here's a bunch of kids hanging out the car window. Just, some real old country folk. Climb out, and we had a lot of folks like that. And a lot of them just, they didn't have suits or anything. And that was, that was the basic Worldwide Church of God group. You could see them coming. You could see them, driving down the highway. Yeah, that's one of us right there. Going along. You remember when you could just tell who was in the church? And we didn't have too many millionaires driving those big Cadillacs up and get out, fancy looking guys walking around, gals. We just didn't have the big sophisticated people, I think more so now, God has called a few of those, but of course, can be a problem if, financial security is a real pressure to overcome in the world. But God did call the weak of the world in many respects, and we have tried to put into practice what God says about personal hygiene and personal appearance, and I think overall we're looking a lot better. And we realize that, hey, God is a God of quality, and Mr. Armstrong taught that and took some time, I think, to get it across. Got criticized for it, still gets criticized for it, because he believes in quality. He believes in excellence. Now, God is the one that created excellence and beauty. He created Lucifer, and Lucifer was the most beautiful being that was ever created. Just beautiful to behold. You talk about, looking at a beautiful gal walking along. And you just normally, just naturally, you just look and say, wow, that's really attractive. Well, that's the way Lucifer was. And God loves beauty. He loves excellence. He loves quality. Mr. Armstrong has instituted that in Ambassador College and still holds to that. And fortunately, I just feel very, very appreciative that I was able to go and learn about it, because I never knew anything about it. Lived up in Oregon. Bunch of loggers up there, And I was surprised. I went back this summer to visit good old Eugene, Oregon. And they're kind of hokey people up there, quite frankly. You see a lot of beards, guys going around with beards. I guess maybe, keeps away cold in the wintertime or something. But, just they do not dress that nice. Just old overalls. This is their uptown wear, They're going shopping or something, And they just do not have the nicer clothing and styles and I don't know what it is in that part of the Northwest up there, but it's just not as nice as I've seen all over the United States, even back in Wheeling, West Virginia. It's kind of, backward right through the Ohio Valley there and hills of West Virginia, but those people, dress nice. And not that you have to dress nice to make it into God's kingdom, but if we're able to, God says he loves people to look good, to look their best, to bring out the best. Physical appearance is one aspect. Development. Now, what's in the heart, as we heard in the sermonette, is far more important. Your mind, your attitude, that's the most important thing. But if you can learn how to properly dress yourself and look your best, then fine. It's pleasing. It's love toward other people. It really is. When I see the people in God's church really dress up, and I notice that on the holy days it seems like we do it best, which is the way it should be. I tell you, it's just nice. Isn't it appealing to you? I like to see people dressed up. I really do. They really look nice. Brings out the best about them. When my wife dresses up, she's very appealing. So she dresses up every night. No. You just like to see that because it's pleasing. And God gave women a special desire to look pretty. Now, in our society, they've gone overboard. You turn on the boob tube, and here are, you know, lipstick, makeup, eyeshadow, hair, you know, dyes and sprays and all kinds of stuff, perfumes, underarm, and they don't stop there. You know, everything personal, you know, they advertise it on TV. Clothes galore. Now, God knew that a woman should look nice and that it is appealing to a man to have his wife look nice. And so he says, you know, that they should do it. They should do it in a proper attitude, though. As we see over here in 1 Peter 3, and notice here in verse 3. And we just read a little while ago verses 1 and 2, now we come down to verse 3. Whose adorning let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair, or the wearing of gold, or of putting on of apparel. In other words, that can be overdone. Where you can just look, you know, like you're a Vogue model, and you're trying to draw attention to yourself. You're not doing it to look pleasing to all people, and foremost, and especially your husband. Now, I've accused women, even my wife, of dressing to please other women. You know, because who's going to notice you more? Your husband? Well, unfortunately, that's a problem that husbands have. They don't notice their wives enough. They don't comment on the new dress or the way they comb their hair or anything new about them, their shoes or whatever. Husbands, yeah, you know, it's my wife. Take it for granted, and that's a problem. You should not do that. So you should always try and enrich your marriage by, you know, thanking one another and showing appreciation and saying, hey, I like that about you, and you really look nice. Giving compliments to one another. But, you know, women a lot of times will be guilty of dressing to please other women. They want to, you know, look at me. I am beautiful. I remember some of the conferences, boy, you know, it really got out of hand. It's ministerial conferences. Of course, this year we're not having one, at least, you know, in June. But I remember you would go to the ministerial conference, and it was kind of indicative of the vanity that was creeping into the church and had been in the church for some time. All of these ministers' wives, and it seemed like the higher level that you got, the worse it was, unfortunately. I hate to say that, but that's, you know, they had more money to work with, I guess. And they'd come decked out, you know, just dripping with, you know, they're just gorgeous, and they'd walk in, and they would look at each other, and you'd have guys standing around, you know, talking, well, you know, it's a silk tie, and this is, yeah, that's a nice suit. And where'd you get your shirts? And, you know, and, oh, this is a, you know, this is a Pierre Cardin, you know, oh, wow, you know. Everybody was interested in their clothes and how they looked and that type of thing. And I think that maybe rubbed off on the church. And I think we had that, really a sophistication that kind of crept in. A lot of those ministers are gone. And, you know, I have to think of some that have, in the area that have left. Sophisticated, you know, just deck themselves out and very conscious of latest styles and that type of thing. Well, that's not necessarily wrong, but if it goes overboard, it's what God's talking about here. And a lot of times with the youth, especially young girls, you know, they want to look beautiful. And, you know, I've talked with a couple of them here, and, you know, at school, hey, you know, the competition is there. If you don't have nice clothes, you're nothing. You're looked down on. So, you know, that pressure is always there. Now, God says, hey, you should adorn yourself and look good, but don't let it, you know, consume your mind and get carried away. Going on here, let's see, in verse 4, but let it be the hidden man of heart, in the which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner, in the old time, the holy women also trusted in God, adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands. In other words, they should adorn themselves. So he's not saying, you know, just become plain, look fuddy-duddy, look real nothing, you know, don't put any makeup on. We've still got some self-righteous ladies in the church that don't put makeup on. Mr. Armstrong says, hey, it's all right if you want to put makeup on. Now, if it's choice because you really don't think that it makes you look better, well, I'm fine. But I think some people just think it's sin. They think it's wrong. Well, it's not. Mr. Armstrong has not changed that. That is, you know, policy of the Worldwide Church of God is that you can wear makeup. A little bit on the cheeks, ladies. A little bit on the lips. And quite frankly, I think most ladies look better with makeup on. my personal opinion. I have not seen too many ladies that look better with makeup off. Matter of fact, I've never met one that looks better with it off. So, you know, the adorning of yourself, hey, fine, you do it. First, you should please your husband, make sure, you know, that he, you know, likes your hairstyle. And most husbands should be willing to let their wives, you know, be very, they're more adept at saying, hey, I think I'll try this or I'll do that. And the husband doesn't really know that much about, you know, hair shapes and how it makes their face look better or whatever. You know, certain hairstyles are better for certain shapes of the face. Most fellows, you know, have their hair cut a certain way and that's it. And ladies are more, you know, knowledgeable at that type of thing and should be. And they should do it in a humble attitude, and it should be something that is a part of their daily life, where they're going to be making their personal appearance pleasing. And that means even staying in good physical shape. We have one lady, and I won't tell you where she is, but she has a machine. One of these things that runs and you walk. She's an older lady. She uses this thing every day, and that gal is in good shape. I think she could outwalk most of you ladies in here. Well, maybe I better not say, but most of the ladies, we're not given age. Really, she is in that good a shape, and she takes care of herself. And her husband, he gets out and walks 3 miles to the store and walks 3 miles back, and they're in good physical shape, and they look good. They really look good. So, you know, your physical condition, your physical health, and personal appearance, you know, they all fit hand in hand. What you eat, your diet, you know, very important. Very important. So that you can stay in good physical shape, so that you can take care of your family, you can look good, you can be appealing to your husband. The husband doesn't come home and say, oh, what a hag, man, I married this slob. You know? And he's bombarded, you know, all day at work. Here's these gorgeous little secretaries walking around. Oh, Mr. So-and-so, you know, and he's sitting there going, oh, you know, he wants to come home to a very pleasing wife. I mean, he really does. And that is a responsibility that a wife has. That is love. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, if you don't do it, then your husband's, he's going to commit adultery, you know, run off with some woman. Well, if he does that, then, you know, he's got a problem. It's his problem. But you can sure help him. You can sure make it a lot easier if you take the initiative to do your part, make yourself very appealing, and look as good as you can. I know Mr. Rod Meredith used to say women should spend an hour a day on their hair. How many of you remember that, when he used to tell that to the ladies in the church? An hour a day on your hair, because God says the hair is a woman's glory. And he says it's their glory. He says it's something he created. He designed it. Can you imagine God sitting down designing our looks, our natures, qualities, traits, and everything? He says, now, woman, let's see, we want the guy to have hair kind of short like this. The woman will have it longer. See? Because we want her to look good. God wanted the women to look good, so he gives them the longer hair. Now, we got guys that are trying to look like the women now, and then, you know, it just doesn't work. But God designed it that way, so that a woman would look good. And she should do her hair in a manner that is going to look good and take good care of it. Take good care of it. And if she doesn't do that, she's falling down in her responsibility. Okay. 1 Timothy, 2nd chapter, and we'll read verses 9 and 10 here. In like manner also, this is God's giving various instructions to the, once again, different categories within the church. It says, in like manner also, that women adorn themselves in modest apparel. Now, it doesn't say you go out and look like a fuddy-duddy. In other words, it should look nice, but it should not be, you know, just so revealing. You know, low cuts and slits up the side where, you know, it's just, it draws attention to yourself. And if you women love other men with a godly love, then you won't dress yourself in a manner which is going to cause men to lust. That's just love. That's outgoing concern. Because a man's nature is to look. And if you can help Well, you dress yourself in a manner where you're modest. You adorn yourself. Now, God doesn't say anything about men adorning themselves. Do you notice here? Because he knows that the women will do the good job for him anyway. He knows that the wife's going to go out and buy him a shirt and get him a suit and get him a tie and, you know, if you're financially able to do that. And the woman's going to take good care of him. But he knows that the woman has a problem of just being overmuch and drawing attention to herself. But he does say that, hey, that's something he's created, that's something that is good, that is something that is going to cause the man to be attracted to the woman. Otherwise, men can get along with that, you know, without the gals. And they certainly enjoy all of the, you know, the fringe benefits of having a good-looking wife. In like manner, also, that women adorn themselves in modest apparel with shamefacedness, with sobriety, not with broided hair or gold or pearls or costly array. Where they, you know, and I, from what I can gather and the research that has been done on that, I guess they used to, you know, put all these big hairdos and stuck way up and out and bushy. And of course, we have some styles like that today, where, you know, here comes this gal, you know, Farrah Fawcett, here she is, and she just, you know, whisk her way into the crowd, and everybody notices her. She's decked out like some Vogue model or something. Well, that's going overboard, and I saw what that was in Pasadena this last year when I was out there. The style show that was going on. And most of them were young gals in their 20s, and they'd come out there, and they're all decked out. You know, they had to be very careful how they talked because, you know, they had so much of the wet stuff on their lips. Maybe some lipstick you put on that stays on is wet, but they have, you know, they would talk like that. Always wetting their lips, so their lips were looking wet, and I'm sitting there going, No, you know, really, it turned me off, quite frankly, you know, because of the vanity. And generally, you know, anything wet is supposed to be arousing to an individual. Well, you know, here's these gals, and they're all decked out, and just coming in and just, you know, if an earthquake took place, you know, what would they do? Oh, and then they're on their, you know, their shoes and everything. They're just like they were just little trinkets that would just fall apart at the first sign of any, you know, adversity. And we got overboard. That's, I'm sure that's what God is emphasizing here. So he says, you know, do it in balance. So you should be modest. And if you want to be a woman who professes good works, then you're going to be modest, but you're going to take care of that responsibility. And, you know, take care of yourself when you get up in the morning. Look good for your husband. Of course, the husband should do the same. If you put your best foot forward, and, you know, I remember so many times I've heard, it was Mr. Plache, I think he gave the sermon on don't take, you know, your mate for granted. And always putting your best forward, which is very true. So that you can look your best because you love that person. You want them to look at you and respect you and admire you for what you are. And because you appreciate the other individual, you're gonna put your best forward. And that's just love. That's outgoing concern. Well, I better stop there. But I think if you put these principles into practice, understanding the attitude of submission, being able to serve and help your husband and work all problems and difficulties out with him and submitting to his final word, you're going to have success. And if you will be a keeper at home and really appreciate that tremendous calling that God has given you to handle that awesome job, and if you will make sure that you personally are taking care of your physical appearance, your physical health, you're going to be serving and helping your mate. You're going to be a good wife. You'll do those things, then you'll be pleasing to God. And God will say, this is the type of attitude that I like to see in a person that is going to be a God. And I'm going to dress in the righteous garments for eternity. And I'm going to bless them with having the opportunity of being a part of the family of God forever and ever. So I hope you'll take them, put them into practice, and it can improve your marriage.